I had my first sort of major sponsors at the age of 20. I think I felt like I had to kind of be on form all the time and like try and impress them or try and say the right thing and do the right thing.
Hey everyone, I'm Katie Trexton and you are listening to Anatomy of an Agency, the podcast that lifts the lid on everything that goes on behind the scenes of the talent industry. In this episode, we speak to Olympian and commercial manager at Team GB, Caitlin McClatchy. Having competed at more than one Olympic Games, Caitlin now works for Team GB, looking after Olympic athletes. I started by asking her to give us a little bit of insight into her career as an athlete.
I was fortunate enough to compete at three Olympic Games in the sport of swimming. I kind of got started from a fairly young age. Actually, both my parents were Commonwealth Games swimmers, although they didn't tell me that until later on. They kind of just let me find my own way in the sport. And then I was actually quite late to the sport. I started to progress at sort of like 15, 16. And then by the time I was 18, I went to my first senior international meet, which was an Olympic Games. And then, yeah, competed, finaled at every Games, double Commonwealth champion. So, yeah, I've had a fairly kind of long career in the sport of swimming. And then I retired just before I was 30 and went into the big wide world of work. Didn't really know what I wanted to do, so kind of was trying to find my feet. Did an internship at the House of Lords, worked for charities, kind of did all sorts really, just trying to work out and figure my new place in the world, figure out my new identity. And then I worked for an organisation called the British Athletes Commission that kind of look after athletes and support them if they've got grievances against their governing bodies or within sport. And that was really good to be on that side. And then I kind of gravitated towards the British Olympic Association. And for me, that was kind of, as an athlete, the pinnacle of my sport to work now at somewhere that I just totally respected. So that was kind of my, in a condensed version, my kind of career into where I'm working now, which is with the British Olympic Association and Team GB.
Well, I don't want you to be intimidated, but when I was about 9, I did get my 5 metre badge. And then I did my first race age 10. It was a width on backstroke. And my parents said that the best part of it was that I'd forgotten my hat and had to borrow one that said Miriam on it, so they didn't have to lay claim to me as I kind of went diagonally across the width.
Oh, that's so sad.
But they were cheering Miriam on, handsomely.
That is brilliant. And then did you follow the career in swimming after that?
No, because sometimes you just don't want to show other people up. So the thing is, they say hunter turned gamekeeper. You are a little bit more like sheep turned shepherd. You've gone from being an athlete, not just an athlete, a champion who was looking for commercial support, to a commercial manager at Team GB, mm-hmm. helping athletes find commercial support. What have you learnt since you've moved to the other side?
Gosh, I've learned an awful lot. As you said, I used to be an athlete who was sort of looking for sponsorships. I had big sponsors who I was involved with, where it comes to like Speedo, Visa, Red Bull. So now being on the other side is kind of a full circle moment, I want to say. And it feels nice to be able to be in a position where I can support athletes to work with some of our major sponsors. As everyone knows, that you know, the BOA, British Olympic Association, is privately funded. We need sponsors to be able to take Team GB to the Olympic Games. So they're so important to us and we want to look after our sponsors, and athletes obviously are a fundamental part of that. So yeah, it's nice to be on the other side now, feel like you're sort of helping our partners, but also helping the athletes as well.
Do you ever think to yourself, oh, I wish I knew this 10 years ago?
100%. There's so many things where I just think, God, if I did that a bit more, if I did that a bit less, and one of the big things I would say is kind of being just authentically you and not feeling like you have to mold to fit to a particular brand. I think from what I know from sponsors that I've been working with, they're just looking for someone who's really like good at telling their story, but really authentically. And I think when I was young, I had my first sort of major sponsors at the age of 20. I think I felt like I had to kind of be on form all the time and like try and impress them or try and say the right thing and do the right thing. And probably didn't be my authentic self enough. So now I look back and I think, God, if I'd just been a bit more me, I don't know, maybe I'd have got more sponsorships or had more longevity through the sponsorships that I had.
Oh, I think we've all been there. The amount of rooms I've been in where I'm like, I've cracked this. If I don't say anything, I can't say anything wrong.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't realise you need to say something to actually make an impression.
Yeah.
So how much do you have to do with the athletes day to day versus their agents? Like, what's the dynamic?
Yeah, so we have, there's kind of a bit of both, really. So obviously we'll speak with agents around looking at sort of sponsorship ambassadorial roles, or with particular opportunities that sponsors might have. But we also go to athletes directly as well, because not every athlete has an agent. So we kind of work with both, really. And you know, a lot of the sponsors want to hear directly from the athletes. So we've got our athletes commission at the British Olympic Association. So that they're a really good sounding board to be able for sponsors to kind of talk to athletes, or we'll get them athletes directly. So we kind of work with both, if that makes sense.
And did you have all the commercial support you needed in order to be the best athlete you could have been? Because I meet quite a few athletes who actually say to me, there came a point where I kind of had to retire because I couldn't get any more commercial support to continue with my sport. And if I didn't transition at the point I did, well, I just don't know how I would have got into the flow of a career outside of sport. Was that your experience, or were you just, I've been in the water enough, it's time to, like aerial, it's time to be on land, guys.
Definitely a bit of aerial. I definitely had enough. I also got injured. So I was trying to go to my fourth Olympics, which should have been Rio 2016. But unfortunately, I was injured. So that kind of made the decision for me. But it's hard in sport. I mean, sport like swimming, it's pretty tough to have those long-term sponsorships. Obviously, there are athletes that can do that, and you know, what high-profile, big-name athletes. But it is really tough. So for me, when I was sort of getting to the end of my career, I probably wasn't, you know, performing as well as I wanted to. So I wasn't getting necessarily as much of those sponsorship deals. That definitely had a hand in when I retired, other than the injury, obviously. So yeah, it is difficult. I mean, you also get, you know, your lottery funding as well for certain sports. Not every sport gets lottery funding. And then, so that can help you to kind of keep your career going and focus on your sport. But yeah, it's difficult. And also, I think one of the big things for me in sponsorship, it's not just the monetary value, it's the kind of that confidence in knowing that someone backs you, knowing that someone has, you're valued by someone. And that was another thing that really kind of, for sponsorship for me, obviously, yes, the money was fantastic to have that income, but it was actually getting to work with those brands. It was actually getting to know that they were behind you. They were almost like an extension of my support team. So that was really difficult when I came to decide to transition, that, you know, once I had left the sport, that wasn't there anymore. So yeah, it definitely did have a hand, not having kind of as many sponsors to when I decided to retire from sport.
Who was your support team? Did it include an agent?
I did have an agent. Yeah, I actually had a few different agents as my career went on.
And playing the field.
Playing the field, yeah. But I put a lot down to and credit to my agent for helping me to get some of these brands aboard. Because if it was me, I would have probably struggled. Being like 19, 20 when I was first signed up by an agent, I had no idea what I was doing. And I think my first agent, they were great. But I kind of felt like maybe, dare I say it, I was a slight commodity. I probably wasn't supported, and maybe it's hard to know whether is it the agent's responsibility, is it the athlete, is it the parents, is it the governing body, but I probably didn't feel like I had enough support in how to sort of maximize the opportunities with the brands. And then my sort of second agency that I worked with, they were really good at kind of focusing on dual career path. So alongside my sport, I was doing university as well, but they also wanted me to, like, okay, what else is out there for you? Don't just focus on your sport. That is going to help you ultimately kind of perform better if you know you've got something else, like a fallback thing, and also just some headspace to take your mind away from sport and university. So they were really good at helping me to kind of think outside the box, look at different career options, you know, build my kind of CV and all these things that as an athlete I had, what on earth is that? I don't have to think about that yet. But they were really good at encouraging me to do that. So I credit a lot to them to helping me with that transition phase out of sport. And also maximising opportunities with brands that I was working with at the time as well.
I think that's actually quite unusual. Like, I hear about a lot of people in sport trying to almost put blinkers on athletes so that they stay incredibly focused on their sport above and beyond anything else. And sometimes beneficially, you know, so they're not distracted, but sometimes kind of selfishly, just to keep them with a single-minded focus. Does that mean, because you went to university, because you had this insight why you were competing, does that mean that when you were transitioning out of swimming, you already knew what you wanted to do? Or was it still a bit of a blank canvas?
Oh God, I had no idea. Like, literally no idea. I think I thought, oh, I might dabble in sport, I might do, but I guess as an athlete, I didn't know what roles were out there. If someone had said marketing manager, no clue what a marketing manager does, no clue what this person does or that person. I mean, the work with the agent on the dual career path program did help me to kind of have a bit of understanding, but I still had that, what am I going to do next? Where's my new kind of passion? What am I going to throw myself into now, like I have with my sport? There was still a bit of a, let's just see what's out there and what do I gravitate towards? And I was kind of open to opportunities, trying new things, trying to say no, but also not saying no to everything, and trying to play the field a little bit to work out what did I actually want to do once I kind of finish 20 years of competing at one kind of sport.
Yeah, 20 years, my goodness. So with hindsight, what would your advice be to young Olympic or Paralympic athletes now? Would it be all your eggs in one basket? And, you know, what we all know is that everybody at the top of any sport competing is determined, they're hardworking, they're resilient. We know there's a core set of character traits here that you're going to be able to transition even if you don't know what's out there. So is it all your eggs in one basket? Or would you go, no, two baskets, split your eggs between them?
Oh, it's really difficult. I guess it really depends on the individual. I mean, personally for me, I felt it really helpful to kind of have two things going on at the same time, which was sport and university, because it helped take my mind off things. And also having those brands that I was working with as well, that was a nice sort of distraction too. So I do think it's really important to try and have those two elements, but obviously it completely depends on the individual. I think some people are really laser focused and that really works well for them. For me, when I was laser focused, I probably had my worst sort of performances. So actually doing both uni, both kind of working with brands and also my sport, I think personally helped me to kind of perform better and enjoy the sport more, because it wasn't so like, this is my hobby, this is my work, this is everything all wrapped into one. I could kind of flip between the two.
What did you study at uni?
I studied politics.
Wow.
Quite like rogue. Everyone was like, oh, sport. I went to Loughborough, so everyone was like, oh, sport and exercise. I was like, oh, no, politics. Not quite sure why I did politics, but I actually really enjoyed it. And then I did a master's in performance psychology, which again was quite like eye-opening. I did it towards the latter stages of my athletic career, and there were some things that I learned then I was like, oh God, if I'd have known this 10 years ago type
thing.
Yeah,
it's not marginal gains, it's like maximal gains from performance psychology.
Exactly, yeah. So yeah, I did 2 degrees whilst trying to like do, you know, however many crazy hours in the pool, early mornings and all that sort of stuff.
Wow, that's amazing. I think it was enough for me just trying to do a degree and socialise. Now reflecting on my life choices. So now you will be working with young athletes, mm-hmm. and obviously Team GB is kind of an interesting one, because in many ways, well, you are a governing body, but in other ways, those athletes are also have an intermediary governing body. They're all working in quite different ways. Do you have access to the young athletes, and are you in any way a mentor to them? Do you pass on to them the lessons you've learned from that which you've studied, from your own life experience, from your career now?
Not directly. So we have got a department at Team GB Athlete Services, and they kind of directly work with athletes. And I think it's a real area where we're keen to kind of do a bit more in supporting athletes. I know as well brands, some of the sponsors that we work with at Team GB are also seeing this area of supporting athletes in their career development, because they see athletes as having all these skills as, you know, resilient, hardworking, determined, motivated. So they are kind of looking to us saying, we have these programs, we want to extend them to athletes. And then hopefully one day those athletes may end up working with us in the future, as well as it being a nice to have to support their kind of dual career paths. So no, personally, I don't directly, but I mean, certainly if any athlete was to reach out to me, I would be more than happy to kind of offer, you know, mentoring or chat to them about their career options or their athletic career. So yeah, not directly, but we support where we can in our commercial team.
So if they were to reach out and they ask the question, because I find this so interesting, right? Sporty people, in my opinion, as an unsporty person, sporty people tend to be sporty. And most of my friends who are elite athletes at some point have tried multiple different sports and taken one path or another. One of the things we know is that the more funding available, the easier the path perhaps, or the fewer obstacles on the path to seeing really how well you can do. So if a young athlete got in touch with you and they were like, look, my favorite sport's swimming, but I actually have an opportunity to go and do football, what advice would you give them?
Oh, then, you know, it's a tough one, really, because I would probably say, and it's probably, you know, a bit cliche, just pick whatever you feel you really enjoy. And if you want to have a career in sport, do you want to get in the pool every morning? Do you want to go on the field? You know, what do you actually want to do? From a commercial perspective, it's difficult, you know, if you're thinking, oh, you know, cold hard, what am I going to get in to support me to be able to do my athletic career? Obviously there's some sports where it's more challenging, but that shouldn't stop you from pursuing kind of your dream, what you enjoy. So I would just say to kind of athletes, go for it. If you're trying different sports, that's great. And hopefully you might gravitate to the one that you actually enjoy the most. When I first started out, I did do athletics and swimming kind of together. And it basically came down to, I had to train outdoors as an athlete going on the track in the winter. So then I was like, oh, these pools are quite nice and warm. That is basically what made me choose swimming. Don't know if I'd have been any good in athletics, but I did, you know, I mean, it came down to that essentially. So I would just say to any athlete that's kind of doing lots of multiple sports, not sure which one, just do whatever you enjoy. Maybe don't pick it on the basis of what's outside, what's indoors, but yeah, do whatever you enjoy.
Proving my point that sporty people are sporty. Talking of sporty people, when a sponsor comes to you, either an existing sponsor or a new sponsor to you, and they're talking about ambassadorships or maybe more tactical executions, if they ask your advice, how do you allocate or recommend different athletes to different partners?
There's a few different ways. Obviously, it's kind of what fits with the brand. So if a brand, for example, is, you know, a vegan-based brand, obviously they're going to want to look for athletes that are, you know, that vegan or vegetarian. So that's quite simple in that respect.
They probably don't want the men's rowing team eating a dozen eggs each for breakfast.
Yeah. Big stacks of like piles of steak on their plate. So that kind of helps to inform that. When it's others, you know, we kind of suggest, I mean, yes, sometimes it does come down to who's got an Olympic medal, who's progressing really well, who's doing well at the Worlds, Europeans, that type of thing, and we can say, well, we know these are ones to watch off the basis of their performances at that moment in time. But it's also ones that we know are authentic, that kind of tell a really good story, are maybe at the start of their career and progressing, and it's a nice story to have, be involved with an athlete on their trajectory up, and, you know, help them to develop and nurture them, and, you know, they can be part of that brand from the start right up until when they compete at the Olympic Games. So it really kind of depends. There's also an element of looking at regional athletes as well across the country, and a mix of sports, obviously, as well. We don't want to just say one sport. We obviously recommend all kind of Olympic sports. So there's quite a lot in the mix, but it effectively comes down to what are the brands, what do they want, what are their objectives, and which are kind of the athletes that are going to be the best fit for them, and which are the ones we can also give opportunities to.
And within that, because obviously with a lot of people, not maybe the new athletes in, but some of the more established athletes who invariably will be popular with brands, no matter the mix, there's no point at which brands are like, oh no, I don't want the most successful one ever, no way. You will have to deal with agents. Mm-hmm. If you suddenly could puppeteer all of us, what would be the ideal way that agents would interact with you and interact the athlete with the athletes and give you access and communicate with you guys in order to create the best possible team?
Gosh, Katie, that is a, that's a tough question. I mean, all agents are obviously quite different, and but that's a good thing as well. And they've obviously all got the best interest for their athletes, right? So I wouldn't want to change that. I wouldn't want to change that. So I don't know. I think it's, do you know what? Most of the agents we interact with are always super like punctual, always come back to us. They also provide us, you know, if that athlete doesn't quite fit, they might say we've got all these other athletes as part of the ones that we work with, which is also really helpful. So I don't know if there's anything I would necessarily say to do differently, actually. I think they're all really, you know, they, I feel like the ways of working that we have with the agents are usually pretty good.
So it's really interesting as you say that, because that's not what everybody we talk to about agents says. And I'm just trying to wonder in my mind whether it's because you deal with the Olympics. Mm-hmm. And the Olympics, to me as a sporting concept, is far more based on pride, mm-hmm. than just commercials, right? If you compare the Olympics to the Premier League, there's a very different focus on why people want to be an Olympian, sometimes, to why they want to be a footballer.
Yeah.
Do you, out of interest, see a big difference in the commercial interest between an Olympic year and the rest of the Olympiad? Because I worked with one of your partners or former partners, Bridgestone, and they were brilliant actually activating throughout the Olympiad, mm-hmm. but I know historically at least that wasn't the case with all brands.
Yeah, I mean, it is a, I guess for brands, you know, they're looking at kind of always on activity. Whereas actually, obviously, if we're every kind of 4 years, every 2 years, if you include the Winter Olympics and obviously then Summer Olympics. So there is something, but we've got other activities, like we've got our kind of youth engagement program, Get Set, which goes on all the time. It's in primary schools. So there is stuff that's going on outside of the Olympiad, but I guess those big spotlight moments are kind of every 2 years for brands. So brands definitely activate more in an Olympic year, whether that be winters or summers. I guess summers obviously is bigger, but they will for winters as well. So there are kind of moments outside of the Olympiad, like the European Games. We've got youth festivals, but yes, they're not on the same scale as the Olympic, but they will activate still. Just depends on the brand, what their objectives are, what they want to achieve. Quite a lot of brands at the moment are probably looking at their next line of ambassadors. That they've obviously had them for Paris, the ones that are still with Team GB, and that have renewed onto LA, and now they'll be looking at their next ambassadors. And they will have activity going on up to at the Olympics. But yes, that is their main big kind of moment to maximise that the partnership.
And my last question is, do you see, working with both the athletes and the agents, a big difference between those where the Olympics is what they're kind of living and dying for? Like they're spending 4 years, every day 4 years, even if they're not training, thinking about training, getting ready for the Olympics, versus the sports like rugby, football, where they've got the World Cup, tennis, where they've got the Grand Slams, golf. Like, yeah, I'm not saying they don't care about the Olympics, but it's not the only focus of the athlete's kind of life. Mm-hmm. Do you see a difference in how they interact with Team GB and the kind of priority and attention they give you?
I think they probably do interact with us slightly differently. I mean, I can't speak for the side of like working with agents on the Premier League, because I've obviously, this is the world that I know is the Olympic world. But I guess for me, the Olympics is really special. It's every 4 years. It's the pinnacle of most athletes' kind of careers. It's the sports pinnacle as well. So I think there is something that probably agents do kind of interact with us differently because of that. And like you said earlier, the sort of sense of pride as well in the games. And I think that there is, because it's every 4 years, because it's something special, I think there is a really good will for athletes to come and do work with Team GB. I mean, personally, from my perspective as an athlete, I saw Team GB as the complete, like, that I had the most respect for. I love my governing body, but to do anything with Team GB, I was just like, I will do it, whatever it takes. If it's got the rings on it, it's got the lion's head, I'm doing it. So I do think there is a sense of that in the kind of athlete community, the agent world, that, I don't know, Team GB just has this huge kind of gravitas to it. So we're really fortunate that we've got that kind of like brand equity, and that people do want to be part of it and do want to do things with us, which is great. And obviously we want to support athletes and we want to support governing bodies. So it's great to work with them. So yeah, in that respect, compared to kind of football, rugby, I do think that athletes and agents do kind of want to do stuff with us.
Well, we're all fans of Team GB. I'm sure you can agree. Now it is time for Legal Corner, brought to you by our partner, Hugh James. And we wanted to pick up on that conversation with Caitlin about what the flexibility is for athletes when they're representing brands or other commercial partners.
Well, I think most contracts have the concept of material breach and then sort of more minor breach. So, you know, if you don't quite stick to the exact wording of something that's required of you in the contract, it's highly unlikely that it's a material breach of that contract. So it's unlikely to get you into major trouble or to a situation where the party that you're contracting with is going to be have the right to terminate, for example, or to sue you for damages. They may come to you and say, well, actually, this was part of a list that's subject to a code of conduct, so they may want a conversation with you about, you know, reaffirming to you that they prefer you to do this and not this. But those are relatively painless conversations and they're often learning experiences for the athletes. And most of the sponsors or the governing bodies or clubs that will be contracting athletes are pretty understanding that, you know, athletes are perhaps on a journey of learning about contracts and about the things they have to deliver and the things they're not allowed to do. And so in most cases, there'd be a lot of understanding. I think if in doubt, you know, the key is to ask for advice and ask for some guidance, you know, in advance so that you avoid those scenarios. You know, I've seen lots and lots of contracts that are put in front of athletes. And when I look at them, the clauses with the athlete's quite understandably got sensible queries about, well, do I have to wear this cap in this scenario, or can I wear my own cap, or, you know, or do I have to wear these shoes, or can I say this, or do I have to say that? And they're actually really sensible queries that perhaps the contract is not as clearly written as it could have been.
Because sometimes what I think we see is athletes are so focused on sticking verbatim to what they've been told to say, or beat for beat to what they've been told to do, that actually the personality they've been contracted for is lost. So would it be a normal thing, for example, for them to go and, if it's not live, record a piece of content and send it off to someone and say, look, in my opinion, this is my version of what you're saying?
Without doubt. You know, if there's scope to record it and then maybe offer a couple of options, even have two goes at it and offer the sponsor the option of which they want to use, absolutely take advantage of those things. It only takes an extra couple of minutes, as you and I found recording some of these pieces. Only takes an extra couple of minutes, and sometimes you need it because we're not used to doing these things. We're not a TV presenter or we're not a pundit. And so, take advantage of those opportunities.
Well, thank you very much to Hugh James' partner, Mark Loosemore, and thank you also to Caitlin McClatchy for her time. But you know who else we want to hear from? We want to hear from you. So please get in touch on social media at Good Vibes Only Talent, or email us, gvo@goodvibesonlytalent.com. And other than that, for now, from me, it is goodbye.